You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove. Flying solo again. Jason, the super producer, is, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know. We better check his schedule and see why he's not available. But when I'm always saying that, because when he gets this episode and starts producing it, he's going to, you know, shake his fist at me and say, you know why I'm not available. So that's for you, Jason. So before we get the episode started, I just want to remind everybody that if you have a story or a sighting or an experience that you want to share with us, you can find us at From the Shadows Podcast on Facebook. You can find our forum page on Facebook, After the Shadows. You can get a hold of me, Shane Grove, author, on Instagram, or our From the Shadows Podcast Instagram page. Or the good old-fashioned way, just go to FromTheShadowsPodcast.com, hit the contact button, send me an email, I'll get a hold of you. We love to hear from everybody, especially if you got a story. We really want to hear that. And if it's something that you want to come on and share, we'll get you on. And then for everybody that, I can't believe I could say this, can't get enough of us. I mean, you can go to sign up for our Patreon page and get extra content. Right before I recorded this, I put up the extra midweek howl that we do for our Patreon members every month. So there's lots of good stuff on there, and go check it out. It's, you know, Patreon and search From the Shadows podcast. So with that being said, we have a really cool guest for today's episode. Somebody who is out there in the field, searching for answers, kicking butt and taking names. I guess we can say that. I want to bring on Mike. Oh gosh, I'm going to butcher this.
There it Phalum, is.
Phalum.
Phalum. Familon. There you go.
Familon. I keep. Here's the problem.
If you didn't call that, I mean.
I know. Look. It's like cursing a field goal kicker hasn't missed a kick. You know, because all I could think about when we were talking about your last name was from the Holy Grail, Monty Python. I like to what is it? The Spamalot. I like to, gosh, what's the scene? I like to, oh, they're singing in the castle. Are you not a Monty Python fan?
I forget what they say. It's been said to me before. I haven't seen that.
That's all I could hear. Yeah. There's one of our fans out there going, I know that, and doing it in their best Monty Python accent. But so Mike is from the group, the Sussex County Bigfoot, right?
Yeah, that's my group, Sussex County Bigfoot, New Jersey. That's kind of the bread and butter where I started my whole Bigfoot foundation and research in New Jersey. Yep.
So why don't you kind of tell everybody, I think everybody hears New Jersey and they think the Jersey Devil, there's no Bigfoot running around there. And I know we've had some people on. I mean, the Pine Barrens is a spooky sounding place.
You're going to be in for a ride. This is going to be a good episode.
I love it. It always is intriguing, that whole area, that sort of geography isn't a place where you think of, when you think of New Jersey, you think of New York, you think of East Coast, it's all city. But a lot of people may not realize how vast and how much wilderness there is in New Jersey and even in New York.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you think of New Jersey, people think of, you know, Camden, Patterson, Newark, the city. And granted, that is a big part of New Jersey. We're the most densely populated state in the country, so we definitely have that going on for us. But we also have some awesome greenway areas. There's 70,000 acres right in Sussex County that are protected natural public areas. And then down in the Pine Barrens, like we were just talking about, 1.1 million acres. It's actually the largest undeveloped tract of land on the eastern seaboard between Maine and Florida. So when people say we don't have too, you know, there's not enough land for a Bigfoot or a Jersey Devil, I like to remind them that, hey, look at the Sopranos, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Think about how many bodies are out there.
Oh.
Because of the mob probably hanging up, and they're not found. So what makes you think we're going to find a Jersey Devil or Bigfoot every day, every time we go out there, you know? So tell me, how did you get into the subject of Bigfoot in New Jersey?
Well, it actually didn't start in New Jersey at all. It started in Florida. I was working at a beach resort in Sarasota. It was like the best job ever had before in my entire life. And I was watching Finding Bigfoot on TV. We could say that, right?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was watching the show, and they were like, if you want to come out with us, you're more than welcome to. You just go on our website and shoot us an email and sign up and pay whatever, and you can come out with us. So I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever. I've never camped before this ever in my life. I was always an indoor kid growing up, video games, all that kind of good stuff. So never camping, whatever. So I had to acquire my camp gear. And I was engaged at the time, and my fiance was like, what are you doing? I didn't tell her that we're going on this Bigfoot trip, right? Yeah. So I was like, I started getting all the tents and stuff and the flashlights. She's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, we're going to go look for Bigfoot in North Florida. And then we broke up before the trip. So I don't know why. I don't know if it was because of the trip or not. But anyways, I moved up to Tampa, and I got a job working on the ambulance. I'm an EMT by trade. So I was working for the ambulance, and I had to find these are non-refundable tickets, right? So I had to find a partner or somebody to go with. And I picked my weirdest partner on the ambulance because I knew absolutely nobody. And I was like, Jimmy, I got a really strange and unusual question for you. But have two tickets to go to North Florida and look for Bigfoot. Do you want to come with me? And he said, and it's my best friend to this day, he said, oh, I've always wanted to do that. And I was like, nice, perfect, right? So then the trip comes around and we go up to North Florida and nothing happens. It's there's like 60 people there. We camp away from everybody because we thought everybody's going to be weird because, you know, they're looking for Bigfoot. So it was like, you know, we wanted to camp away from those people. But nothing happened, right? And it was a lot of hiking, a lot of talking to witnesses. It was really cool in that sense, but we didn't have any Bigfoot activity whatsoever until the last night. And it was last night. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. Me and Jimmy are up. We're watching a meteor shower, and we're just kind of talking and doing whatever. And we hear a tree knock come from one side of camp, and I instantly thought that it was these people that put on the expedition that are knocking on that knock you know knocked on the tree to you know try to get us going. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They're chumming the water a little bit.
Yeah.
Trying to make you guys think, okay, nothing's happened. Exactly. We got to give them something. Yeah.
Dinner and a show, you know? So a tree knock happens from the complete opposite side of camp like a minute later, but it's like far away. So I'm like, wow, these people are pretty good. You know, they got radios. They're telling them, you know, when to knock and stuff. And then nothing happens. About 10, 15 minutes later, take like a fist size rock, right? And you could hear it come down through the pine trees. And it was obviously thrown. And it comes down through the pine trees and lands like 5 feet away from us, right? So I'm petrified. I'm like, nope, this is how horror movies start. And my friend's like, if you want to sleep in the car, you're more than welcome to. And by the time he could say that, I had my tent and my sleeping bag, and I was just beelining it right for the car. But then he finally talks some sense in me. He's like, Mike, you know, this is why we're here. Bigfoots knock on trees and they throw rocks. Like, this could be Bigfoot activity that we're having. So he talked me out of the car, back by the campfire. And over the course of the next 15 minutes, four more of these fist-sized rocks land like 10 to 15 feet away from us.
And you guys are the only ones that are up.
That's what we're assuming. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, so you know everybody else would be assumptionally asleep, or they wouldn't be. They wouldn't be messing with us, the other people on this trip, because they're kind of in it for the same reason that we're in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess it could have been, but I knew it wasn't a person at that exact moment after this fourth rock came, or the fifth rock came, because a laptop sized boulder came crashing down through the trees and landed like 10 feet from us. And
I was asking, you guys are the only ones up, is why are they messing with you?
Right.
Because they know you're up and they're trying to, you know, they're like trying to get you into your tent or something, or what?
I think it was because we remember I said we camped a little further away from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was because of that. I think we were just a little bit too close to their family group. Like, we were the closest of them to the family group. And that was just a little too close for them. I think they hang out in family groups. I think that's kind of like their lifestyle and the way they do their whole family situation. And I think that we were probably a little too close to them. That's why we got such aggressive activity where everybody else didn't get too much activity at all, because they didn't A, pose a threat, and B, weren't as close as we were to them.
So nobody else, like, so you wake up in the morning, do you guys share this then with the other people?
Well, yeah, we were like, at first, did anybody hear tree knocks? Because we didn't want to sound crazy, like, you know, there's someone just threw a boulder at us last night. Like, that's kind of sounds crazy for two new people to show up to a BFRO expedition and say that, you know, we thought anyway. So we were like, did anybody hear tree knocks? And everybody's like, no, nobody was up. We were asleep. So then we didn't really go on too much. And on the forum afterwards, I ended up telling the whole story, but no, not at the time. I didn't, nobody heard anything. Nobody said anything about it. Just us.
Now, I know you guys are newbies, but did you think about going out and like looking for footprints or anything?
Oh, absolutely. You know, us being brand new, we're still pretty, you know, I don't do anything like kind of like half-assedly. So like I'll make sure what we did was we took like measurements and we went out to where like, cause we were on a knoll, kind of like on a, like a mound, if you will, a tall, big mound. And the closest that thing could have been was like, it closest was like 70 yards away. So I don't know, for a human to throw a boulder, laptop size boulder, 70 yards, that's just absolutely not within human range.
No, that's not. That is not.
I could barely toss pitch a softball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I've known some big world-class throwers who could not pick up something that big and throw it that far. And I've seen them throw 100 pound rocks and throw them, you know, 20 feet. And sure, that's unbelievable. And it's like, that's not quite that as big as what you're talking about. But then to throw that 10 times that distance, that's unimaginable. That's unimaginable. But so there you go. So you think, you had, now, how long ago was that then?
That was in 2011. That was my first Bigfoot thing was 2011.
So 11 years have gone by and you've got a lot of experience that we'll talk about. Looking back on that, has it cemented in your mind that was actually what was going on, or has it maybe changed your opinion a little bit the other way?
I as far as if it was Bigfoot or not, I don't really think it matters to me anymore. I think what matters the most is that it got me into Bigfooting. That initial event got me on the verge of thinking, you know, this is something that Bigfoot could do, and this is something I'm kind of interested in. And from there, you know, taking that to the next level and researching it more and more and more, it could have been somebody messing with us. It could have been our imaginations, or hell, I could even be making the story up for all you know. But would that lead me whatever was the cause of whatever happened, it led me to where we are today. And I think that's the coolest thing.
Well, I'm flattered that you think talking to me on this podcast is the coolest thing.
From the shadows, baby.
Now, before, now that I know that your very first experience happened in Florida and then you left and are now in New Jersey, I'm going to guess that you were visited by one Mr. Stacy Brown, who said, "Listen, Florida is not big enough for the both of us. So I suggest you get out." Now I say that because I know Stacy will be driving his Uber when he listens to this. Yeah. And he'll be like, "Gosh dang it," every time he has to say something.
Yeah, Stacy and I are acquaintances. We're pretty good.
Oh, he's
a good guy.
He's the best, and he'll get a laugh out of me busting his chops over that. but seriously, that is something I could see Stacy Brown doing. Anyway, how did you end up leaving? How did you end up like leaving then Florida and getting to New Jersey?
Yeah, well, I was originally from New Jersey. My family's up here, and I had moved down there for the fiance, like I said. And when that didn't work out, did the whole EMT thing, and I kind of got burnt out and homesick, so moved back up to Jersey, where the family is. And I thought my Bigfoot career was over. I'm like, oh man, there's no, you know, New Jersey Bigfoot. And then I get up here and you know, one of the first things I do before I unpack is look at big New Jersey Bigfoot reports. And I see that New Jersey is like number 6 or 7 on the list of Bigfoot sighting states. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And then from there, I looked at the sightings by county and saw that Sussex County is up there number one. So I'm like, wow, there might be something to this. So I started that Sussex County Bigfoot group, and that was back in 2015, I believe. Yeah, 2015, I moved back to Jersey. Yeah, no, 2014 it was. Yeah, long time ago.
So how was it received? I don't know, you know, because we're in our own little world here, and I'm not, you know, and I know I've talked to a lot of people in Ohio that have Bigfoot groups and stuff. And mm-hmm. So back then, though, how quickly did other people raise their hands and say, hey, I want to jump in and join you? Or, I mean, how did you get the word out?
You know, and I got to give my credit to the BFRO, because I connected with a BFRO member up here. I was an investigator with them for a while. So I had my BFRO connection. When I moved back to New Jersey, I reached out to gentleman Eric Spinner, who's a phenomenal friend of mine. And he kind of hooked me up with some New Jersey people. And then once I started that Sussex County group, people just started coming out of the woodwork, just saying, hey, I've seen a Bigfoot here and I've seen a Bigfoot here, and this is 30 years ago. And it was 2 years ago, or it was last month. And, from there, I decided to start this rolling kind of online database, which is, it can be seen on my website. But it's all of Sussex County's Bigfoot sightings. There's 58 of them in the county, which is pretty cool. And you can actually click on each one of them and see the individual reports and from the initial report to the in-depth, you know, investigative report and stuff like that.
Wow. So you've cataloged the 58 known reports for Sussex County.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Now, is there anything about those reports that, is there any patterns, or is there any areas that stand
yeah
out?
Okay, yeah, so here we go with the pattern thing. So I think that and I would challenge your listeners, especially researchers, to look at their reports while listening to kind of my philosophy about how Bigfoots move, and try to relate their sightings and their database reports with this, and hopefully it makes some kind of sense in that means, so we could start putting some more puzzle pieces together, right? Does that make sense?
Yes,
kind of. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So in New Jersey, we have a really cool movement of Bigfoot throughout the state, and it happens every third year. So every third year, sightings in X part of the state increase by 80%. Right now, the Bigfoot are in Sussex County by me. It's that year that they're up here. We've had 11 sightings this year, and I've not in the county, and I've not collected sightings from anywhere else in the state this year. So with that being said, so we have to ask ourselves, why every third year, right? Being researchers, we got to ask that question, why? And I think it's because if you look at a Bigfoot sighting map, and you have a bear population map, right? And this is pretty much the entire United States. And you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. The sightings are pretty much the exact same. And that the overlay is very phenomenally similar. Same way goes with Florida. Is a perfect example. There's like three distinct black bear populations in the state of Florida, and there's three distinct sightings of Bigfoot, locations of Bigfoot in the state. Anyways, I digress. But I think Bigfoot eat what bear eat, right? So that would make sense, especially because their populations are very similar, like we just said. What do bear eat? We got berries, bushes, grasses, ferns, shrubs, garbage sometimes meat. what's super interesting, and a biologist or a botanist can back me up on this, but if you take that food source, like a berry bush, and you take all the berries off of it and strip it so it's like dead, right? It takes 3 years for those berries to grow back. So I think Bigfoot's movements are nomadic. I think they have a nomadic movement around the state, and you could actually track them going around the state counterclockwise, and you can kind of track their movements and where the sightings are increasing, going to increase, and have increased in the past, which is really super, super exciting. And I don't think that's been shown anywhere else in the country before.
Really? That would be super interesting for researchers in every state to kind of take a step back and do a 3 to 6 year
test it out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know. That's just if it does though, how cool is that?
Yeah, that would pinpoint. I mean, at the very least, you kind of know, like, okay, 3 years from now, I believe they're going to come back to Sussex County in full force, and maybe you can prepare for that.
And you can even take it one step further. So I think there's 9 individual Bigfoot in the state. And I think this because now this relies solely on sightings now. Now we're going not by evidence, we're just going on sightings, right? And when I say evidence, footprints, hair, you know, whatever we find, but that also does rely on sightings before. But this is strictly from sightings. But the first group of individuals, there's 5 of them. There's an adult male, an adult female, and 3 juveniles. And they have like a black hair. Like a dark color fur, and then about a month later comes the red color fur, and that has 4 individuals in it, 2 juveniles and a mother and a father.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And so you think those are the only the only ones in the whole state?
Yeah, I do. I don't think there's many much of a population in the state. I don't think there can be, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's kind of like, because I mean, what I would think would be like, oh, there's got to be a couple hundred here, a couple hundred there, 50. You know what I'm saying? Like to think that there's only that few, kind of blows my mind a little bit.
Yeah,
but the area that you're talking about, if that's how many there are, now you can see why you just don't run into them.
Well, exactly. You got to be in the right place at the right time. And that's if you're lucky, then you might want to have, they might want to have some interaction. But people are going to say, well, 9 individuals is not enough to keep the population going, which is 100% accurate. But we do have the New York Bigfoot, which there's no artificial boundary. There's no natural boundary from between the 2 states, between Pennsylvania or New Jersey and New York. And then you have the Delaware River on the Pennsylvania side of New Jersey. Sussex County is in the armpit. I forgot to mention that between Pennsylvania and New York, the very top of the state. So on the Pennsylvania side, we have the Delaware River, which I think a Bigfoot could easily swim over because it's been videotaped multiple times that bear cross the Delaware River. So I certainly think a Bigfoot can cross, and that could be for repopulation purposes and to intermingle and to, you know, shimmy shimmy with the other Bigfoot.
Yeah, I mean, they don't know that they're not supposed to go over there and hang out with the New Yorkers and the Pennsylvania, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Yeah,
like you said, yeah. It's like, hey, we don't know, you know, it's just a, you know, a hot Bigfoot over there. You know? that's super interesting. I mean, I've never heard that kind of, thought about the population and its migration around a certain area. So I kind of hope some people hear this and kind of take that to heart and maybe do some of their own research and come back with some of their findings. I think that would be kind of cool. Or at least reach out to you and say, hey, I checked this out, and this is what we came up with.
Yeah, or even, you know, if take my database and say, hey, these numbers aren't right, because something might not be right. They're on that map. I did color code the pins to be every 3 years. So in theory, the pins on the map should all be the same color, but they're not. So there's something a little off with my theory, which I would love for somebody to come and say, hey, I think X, Y, and Z because of this, this, and this. You know, that would be totally phenomenal if somebody could do that. So
good. There's nothing better than homework.
And it's like just, you said, like, I think the basis of any researcher is to find answers. And I think that's, even if you're not a researcher and just interested in the topic, I think that's, kind of your, the sole reason why you're interested is to find answers. You're interested in the mysterious and the mysteries of, you know, whatever, because we want to know the answers to these certain things. So, by doing, like I said, homework, you know, and like I say, putting the puzzle pieces together, maybe, we can start to see the big picture soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more people that are doing, cause I know there's a lot of great people out there doing a lot of great research and Absolutely. Investigations and stuff. And I think the more variety of hypotheses get applied to try to, you know, figure out, you know, what, like you said, what is working and what doesn't work as far as theories go, it's going to be a bigger piece to your puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, that you're trying to fit, you know, cause I guess you can't really eliminate everything, but you certainly can come at it with a lot more certainty about some things.
Well, that's true. You can't eliminate anything until we actually know, we know exactly. Things, but we don't know anything.
So, okay. So now that you're in New Jersey, you set all this up. What happens then? You guys start going out and investigating cases that come to you or sightings that come to you, or do you go out and just try to find evidence on your own?
So yeah, we started going out just by just a couple people up in North Jersey, just me and a couple friends, and then I was like, you know what? I'm tired of all these shows on TV that are fake. And I hate to say it, but we all know that shows are produced for ratings, and they're not known for to be the truest of the true when it comes to Bigfoot research. So, and if I just bursted anybody's bubble, I do apologize.
I just heard Cliff on Finding Bigfoot say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and he was on, you know, he was on the show that basically, I don't want to say he's the biggest perpetrator of it, but you know, it's right. You know, they did a lot of stuff just for entertainment. Yeah. I don't want to say entertainment value, but to make it more appealing to sit and watch. Cause you and I both know it's not, something doesn't happen every time you go out.
Exactly.
Something probably doesn't happen every 10 times you go out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like fishing. You have more luck fishing, you know, than you do. But
I don't know. I'm not that great at fishing. I tried, but I'm really not that great at fishing. No, it's the best show on TV, or the best way to capture evidence is to go into the woods in the middle of the night with no equipment, sit there and be silent. And that's the best way that you're going to capture evidence or see something. And unfortunately, that makes a really terrible show.
Yeah, it does.
Go figure.
Yeah, it does.
So what I decided to do was we take not only the night investigations that we do, but we also do the thing like Finding Bigfoot did, where we find witnesses and interview them. But we show the behind the scenes things in our show. It's called In the Shadow of Big Red Eye. And it's we go around to these locations that have had sightings or have had witnesses or just could have the potential to have good sightings, and we do investigations and we film our investigations of the area. So that's called In the Shadow of Big Red Eye, and Big Red Eye is Sussex County, New Jersey's very own Bigfoot.
Yeah, I was reading before we came on, I saw that's what. Like we call it the Ohio Grassman, they call it the Big Red Eye, which is kind of an ominous way to describe something.
Yeah, I mean, it's I suppose if you want to get right to the point, that's how to do it.
I gotta be honest. I mean, I'd like to go out and see the Grassman. I'm not so sure I want to go see a Big Red Eye. Since we established, I have seen a Big Red Eye, one or two, and it was not something I'm like, I want to go out and see that again.
Yeah,
you know. So, just like a big, you know, ape type creature hanging out in the tall grass sounds kind of pleasant.
I was on a night hike the other day and I saw the best eye shine that I ever saw. It was bright red, and I was like, oh my God, I almost peed myself a little bit. And then I realized it was just a reflector from a fence. So, and it's that kind of stuff that you actually get to see on the show, because I'm going to include that because that's pretty funny actually.
but that's true. You know, you definitely want to put that under just to say, hey, look how experienced you are. And you still kind of got fooled for a second.
Look, the whole reason why I made the show is to get friends and families out and into nature, off the couch, and to like explore something, just to explore something in nature, right? So, I think it's too many people are connected nowadays to the phones. I mean, you and me are, you know, sitting in front of computers talking, of course, right now. But I think in general, especially the younger generations, too connected all the time. Too much internet, Wi-Fi, 4G, 5G, whatever you have now. And nobody spends enough time in the woods. So what the series is truly about is it's filmed in an amateur style. So like the next generation of Bigfooters can go out and film in the same way that I'm filming and hopefully make it a lot better than my show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You're trying to inspire people.
Absolutely.
To get out there and like you said, you know, be better, you know, be better, be more innovative, come up with their own type of investigative tools, you know, or
their own
process
their own,
that they
can,
that they can share for sure.
I just saw somebody today on Facebook. They're using they just tried using some sort of spray foam for track casting, and they were trying it out in snow and it worked. I was like, wow, that's something I never would have thought of. But it doesn't melt the snow, and it comes out perfect. So it's like, wow, that kind of stuff needs to happen more often, I think, to think outside of the box with certain things and then Bigfoot research.
That now I've never gone out and cast a track, but I got to think that would be a lot easier to do than take mortar and water and pour it in there and then come back after it's set and take it out. I mean, spray foam would be like instant, right?
It's something that I have to look into a lot more, but it's a great idea, really.
Oh, gee. So as you're going out and doing some of this research and investigation, what kind of stuff have you yourself experienced or discovered?
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
We have come across in High Point State Park in New Jersey, which is in Sussex County. It's kind of like my go-to area for really good evidence. I had a witness contact me and back in 2014, and he was like, I'm a science teacher from Inby, New York City. And I, every weekend in the morning, early morning, I come out and I ride my bike up in a mountain bike up in High Point to get away and to whatever. And it's in the wintertime, and I have found thousands of footprints throughout the years that I've been going up there. And I said, "You're kidding." He's like, do you want me to take you up there? And I said, "No." No, I said, absolutely. You know, so we went up there one morning, and it was like a fresh snow on the ground. It was super early. Nobody else was up there before us. And I know when people say nobody was up there, there's always like, oh, well, it could have been somebody was up there. You know, nobody was up there. You know, I can tell, like, nobody's up there. So, but I mean, I don't know. But we walked down like a mile and a half down this fire road, and paralleling the fire road, about 2 feet off the tracks or off the roadway was a Bigfoot footprint. And it was 15 and a half, 16 inches long in the snow, 11 and a half inches wide. We followed it for like six tracks over about 70 yards. And then we lost it because the snow had stopped and it was frozen ground. So that was really cool. That was probably one of the best physical pieces of evidence that we've collected. And the witness was like, "See, I told you." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." But I know he couldn't have done it either because we were up there before him. Anyways. Also from High Point State Park, we got a really stellar vocalization. I did a barred owl call, and I got a response back. It was a three howl response. And, what I do is before I publish any of my, evidence, I always get it like analyzed by scientists or whomever in the field does that sort of analysis, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a friend Devin, and he does bioacoustics, and he does that's what he does on the side, is Sasquatch research. So he uses his skills and whatever, and he came back and with like this 2-page report. I sent him the audio. And he came back and said, "Well, because this X, Y, and Z, it's outside of human vocal range, and it's also no known animal." So to have somebody come back and say that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And that's so, from, you know, my bet in New Jersey. Go figure, of all places.
Now, did he? Did they say it was the Jersey Devil, though? That's what.
So here's my view of the Jersey Devil. Now, I know we talked a little about before the show about the Jersey Devil. So I think now, put your seatbelts on for this one. I think that the New Jersey Devil is an actual misidentified Bigfoot.
Really?
I do. Yeah. And the reason why I think that is there's been no physical evidence of the Jersey Devil ever captured. Their sightings of the Jersey Devil represent a Bigfoot. They're 7 foot tall, screams in the night with glowing red eyes. That sounds like a Bigfoot to me. I think it's just a phenomenal story of the Jersey Devil. It's the 13th child born to Mother Leeds, the mother gave birth. Mother Leeds gave birth, and she cursed the child. Says this child's going to be the devil, and sure enough, little baby sprouted wings, grew a little tail, the horse head. And killed the family, flew up through the chimney, and terrorizes the residents of the Pine Barrens to this day. That's the story. And as terrific as the story is, I don't know if that's too folklorish to be true or not. I don't know. You be the judge.
The only thing that I would say, from what I remember of the story of the Jersey Devil, and the one, it was one particular event, right, that really, like, one morning it was the town woke up and found footprints all over, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that,
yeah, well, in I believe it was 1909, there was a rash of sightings. It actually closed schools down, closed the factories down. So there was definitely something going on during that. That actually, a little side fun fact for you is the Philadelphia Zoo actually offered a $10,000 bounty to anybody that could capture the Jersey Devil, dead or alive. Right. So somebody, I don't know how, I guess the rules were a little lax back in the day, but they got a kangaroo. They painted. Oh, God. They painted the poor thing green with a yellow stripe going down the back and glued fake wings to this poor little thing and tried to turn the thing in for the reward. And then the zoo was just like, this is a kangaroo. We got these things here. This is not how it works.
And all the Philadelphia fans just booed.
Yeah,
they came to the zoo and booed the kangaroo. You call yourself a devil, boo. But when I was going back to that, weren't one of the pieces of evidence where there was footprints on the roofs in the snow.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's the only part to me is like, how could a Bigfoot do that? I mean, I know I've heard stories of Bigfoot.
Unfortunately, we don't have any of those casts of the footprints. That's the thing. I think this is going to now, and I have to say, The people of southern New Jersey, the Pineys, we call them, they're very extremely passionate about their Jersey Devil. As per them, the thing is real, it exists, and there's no two ways about it. So when I say this, I say this with all due respect for the people of southern New Jersey. But I think, in that time, in the early 1900s, there was actually a sandhill crane that kind of migrated north. And it happens, it doesn't happen often, but, they resemble a Jersey Devil extremely well, especially if you play a little game of telephone throughout the years. And I think that's probably what they saw back in the early 1900s. But that's just my opinion. And like I said, the people of South Jersey are correct, and they always will be. I have to say that because I got a death threat one time from somebody.
Well, I was just jokingly going to say, hey, look, you know, you're going to end up in the Pine Barrens, not the way that you really want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, no, don't and even no, joke about that because this is, yeah, now they're quite passionate. Passionate people.
Remember, everybody listening, that's Mike Fallon. Fallon.
Well, you can't say it correct, so I don't have anything to worry about. There we go.
Oh, my gosh. So you, what else have you then out there investigating? I mean, that sounds like, you know, you got footprints, you got some great vocalization. Is that the extent of what you yourself have experienced?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the Pine Barrens, I was down in the Pine Barrens where we found some juvenile tracks, which is awesome. And what's really cool about this is we tested out my 3-year cycle theory. And so we went down there. We found these tracks. They were about 6 inches, 5-6 inches long when we first found them. And they were about a mile and a half back off this river in the Pine Barrens where, yeah, I mean, you had to hike off trail to get to there. It's crazy if there's any kids around. But anyways, I guess there could have been some crazy people. But what's cool about it is we went back there 3 years later and those we found like 8-inch footprints. And then we went back 3 years later and there were 12-inch footprints.
So they're returning to the same spot as they grow.
And that just would clarify my 3-year cycle theory, and it would also lend some credence because you could see the different size trackways and the different individuals that were there. So you can count the 5 individuals or the 4 different individuals in that family group that were all there at that time, because there were different size tracks.
And is that stuff then that gets added to the database, or is that just that you know to apply to the database?
Because unfortunately, that's in South Jersey. That's not in Sussex County, be. One of my little ticks is that researchers don't report themselves or report activities themselves, and I think that's a really disservice to the field. I think we get some really great activity, but I know you said you're not a researcher, but as a researcher, I don't have anywhere to report my activity to. You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. Like,
I think,
you know, and I kind of described like the experience that we had, and it's like, well, I don't even know what to report. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I don't even know what to report or how to even go about reporting it, and who would I report it to? Because I don't know that what I saw, you know, or what I experienced. And, you know, and I got to think that there's a lot of people that probably feel the same way.
Sure. That,
okay. Is what does my little, you know, I didn't have a visual and I didn't come across footprints. Did I really hear something? What did I experience, and who do you tell it to? You know, cause that's kind of I think people probably think that, you know, and that probably hurts getting all the information.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And that's why I like to go out, and we were talking about before we got on the air here, my library tour that we got coming out in 2023. And that's one of the reasons why I love to go around to libraries. For those of you who don't know, I'm going around to a bunch of different states in the beginning of 2023. And I go to libraries, local libraries, and I talk about Bigfoot for an hour. And then I open the floor up to anybody that has had a sighting and wants to talk about it. And let me tell you, there's people there that have been bottled up for 40, 50 years and never said anything. And then you give them that opportunity and it's wonderful. And then you have people that are like, oh, I've been hunting for 40 years and there's nothing out there in the woods. And then you say, well, you know, have you ever came across this, or have you heard this? And then they're like, well, yeah. I'm like, oh, well, that could be a Bigfoot. And they're like, oh, huh.
Well, yeah, look, you know as well as I do, the majority of people probably that are out hunting, for instance, they probably don't want to come across the Bigfoot. So they're, even if they had some sort of experience, they're not going to admit to themselves, let alone anybody else,
yeah,
that they're where their perfect spot to hunt deer could be tainted, yeah, by an eight-foot hairy creature. You know,
I think it's great because you have the hunters and a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of hunters, some hunters that I have talked to feel that since they're older and more experienced, that they know everything in the woods, and I and have come across and have seen and heard everything in the woods. So I say, someone comes up to me and says, I've been hunting for 40 years. I have never come across the bones of a Bigfoot. Where are the bones of the Bigfoot? And I love that question, man. That's one of my favorite questions because it gets me going, because I got the perfect answer for it, right? And I whip it out too. I'm quick with it. And I say, boom, well, have you ever seen a bear skeleton? And they're like,
nope.
Crap. So, it's cool though, because you know, that's what I call kind of like education. You try to educate these people more and more about the topic, and somebody that comes at you with a question like that and where the bones is obviously, they got some, they're coming into it with something. So they obviously have, you know, some sort of vendetta or prior opinion, if you will, about Bigfoot. But if you can just educate anybody and everybody, just say, listen, we're not crazy people out here looking for this made up thing in the woods. This is, you know, we can put some science behind it, and we could put some real data behind this stuff, and hopefully get more people on board with it, and get the right people on board with it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I do want to ask you, so what are some of your favorite sighting stories that you have heard or been told? We'll just center around New Jersey. Like, what are a couple of the ones that you've talked to somebody and they just told you a story that was just amazing?
Well, can we go down to Florida? Because I got the best story for Florida.
I'm sorry, Stacy Brown.
I'm gonna steal some of the center, and he's gonna be pissed at me because he knows exactly what I'm talking about too. So there's this one piece of property in Florida that's very famous. It's been on shows and everybody knows about it. But
we're not talking about Disney World, right?
Not Disney World. Okay. This property has some really cool sightings on it, and the first thing happened a long time ago, 30 years ago, when the house was just getting built, and the Hispanic men that were working on the roof, they didn't speak any English. But after the day's work, they used to say goodbye, whatever, and come back the next day and do their work, and then say goodbye and come back the next day. And they would say, you have a very nice monkey, man. Because they didn't know how to speak any English. But they knew just enough to say that you have a nice pet monkey, man. Which is really cool. They're just sitting there working on the roof. How would they know, right? I mean, what is that, first of all? Let's start there. Then they would have, and I know we're kind of, you know, we're not doing the best on time, but they had little sparrows would be, I guess, caught somehow and defeathered and then thrown on their front yard. So they would find, they would wake up to find dead, defeathered sparrows over the front yard. And then he would, the husband would throw the sparrows kind of to the other side of the fence back in the woods, and the next morning it'd be back again. That would happen routinely. They used to also get rocks thrown. This is extremely close, within 20 miles of where I had my first encounter. So this also, they used to get rocks throws constantly at their property, which is really cool. They actually, they had like this kind of older concrete that was getting kind of decrepitated and falling apart, right? And the Bigfoot used to collect that and throw those pieces of concrete.
Okay.
Well, Florida doesn't have any, it's very hard to find rocks in Florida. So it was cool. This sounds like somebody crazy, right?
Yeah.
So,
sparrow thing, I've never heard. I've never heard of a bird getting defeathered and then tossed.
And, you know, who knows what it could be, if it's even Bigfoot related. I'm not saying it is. Another story that happened on their property was the husband would get up every morning and go out to get the newspaper, walk down their front driveway and their front walkway to get the newspaper. And one morning there was a rattlesnake on the walkway. So he took out his machete and chopped killed it, and threw it across the fence, right? And he chopped it up and threw it across the fence. The next morning, the snake was in a straight line on his doorstep, facing the door, right? So the Bigfoot got the pieces, or whoever got the pieces, and lined the snake up on the doorstep. So he's like, screw this. So he buried the thing. And the next morning it was unburied on his doorstep, curled up in one of those like patterns, like it was going to strike type of thing. Sounds crazy. I'm saying this and I'm like, I sound crazy saying this.
Well, whatever is doing this, that did that, whether it was a Bigfoot or a person, that's creepy.
And this happens over years. We're talking about happening over 30 years. So, if it's a person, I'm not saying they live in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of, like, I mean, it's kind of redneck out there. So, I mean, maybe people got some time on their hands, but I don't know. And it's just the location that it's in. And, if you knew the area and the history of the area, you would understand that this has very high potential to be a Bigfoot activity. The coolest thing, the wife was telling a story one time, is they were sleeping. It was winter, so they had the windows open in Florida, and they hear something jump on their roof, right? And they're like, oh, this is a Bigfoot. They hear it walking down the roof. You know, they got one of those slanted roofs. And it's, of course, it's like a full moon out. So they got the silhouette, going on type of thing. So she got her gun and she's like, I'm going to shoot this thing. This is a Bigfoot. I'm going to shoot it when it looks down over this window. Because it was coming like down, over top of her bed, coming down. And she heard it like walking. And the thing looks down and the silhouette starts coming down. You see the head come down, then it jumps off the roof. It was a Florida panther.
Ooh.
Yeah. At that point, there was only 25 of them left in the wild. How cool is that?
Well, thank God you didn't shoot it.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would.
I like to throw that story in there just because it's super cool. It's not Bigfoot related, but it's just one of the coolest things.
Yeah, no, and as cool as that is, a Florida panther's not putting together a snake back on your front.
No, I don't think so. No.
Wow. Well, I wanted to, because we want to direct everybody to your YouTube stuff, but I want to ask you, I started watching the one where you went and did the investigation up in Vermont with the real famous pic. I mean, everybody's probably seen it. That's in the Bigfoot.
Yeah. The Vermont baby Bigfoot picture. Yep.
Yeah. So you went up and did that. What was your conclusion when you came away from that? I mean, cause I didn't see the end. So I don't know if there was a definitive, you know, conclusion that you came to, but what was your sense when you went up and investigated that?
Well, I think what I didn't realize when I went up and started that investigation was the hours that Mr. Steve Coles and friends have put into investigating that photo. And we're talking about days and days and days that they tried to recreate this and just have not been able to. Some people say it's an owl coming down and kind of swooping in. That's just kind of laughable. I think it's either one of two things. It's either a moose with a baby or a legitimate Bigfoot. I don't think it's one of the two. And I can't, you know, as much as I've looked at that picture, my mind is making it seem like it's a moose there, that I see a moose, but I don't think I do. You know what I mean? I'm trying to come up with a rational explanation for it, but I don't think I can.
I looked at a picture of a moose that didn't even enter the equation. I don't even know how you could look at
it. It took some time. Yeah, it took some time to get there.
I was going to say, I mean, I would have to do, okay, I'd have to do some, but yeah, that was a very interesting case. And so the one picture right before the picture of the, you know, whatever it is, moose, Bigfoot with a baby. So the coyote is running off.
Yeah.
With the so would a coyote run off with the tail between its legs for a moose?
Yeah, no, probably not.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Well, and the other issue with the moose is that just like it's laughable that it couldn't have been an owl because the camera's trigger speed, it was at like a second. So an owl would have been out of that frame before the picture even shot, right? A moose would have been in that frame many times, not just on one shot, right? Because a moose doesn't move that quick.
Yeah, that's so, kind of...
It's you know, now that I say that, it's almost laughable to think that a moose could even be there, because unless a moose can teleport, I'm not saying a Bigfoot teleports, don't get me, but a Bigfoot can move quicker than the camera can take pictures, for sure.
Well, since you brought that up.
Oh, here we go. Yep.
Since you brought that up, what, how many reports have you gotten that include, you know, the, and I hate to say the woo aspect of it, but the more paranormal aspect, not that seeing a Bigfoot's normal, but you know what I'm saying, but like, has there been a lights or UFO activity or anything like that,
you know,
that goes along with it?
I've in this area of New Jersey, it's pretty much biological Bigfoot, as classic as it comes. I have seen and I don't normally share the story, but I will. So right before we got that really good Bigfoot vocalization up at High Point that I was telling you about, about 15 minutes beforehand, there was a group of five of us, and we all saw it. It was just like a zigzagging light through the sky. It was red, and it was doing like M's, like an M or a W, just across the night sky. And we all were like, what is that? We have no idea. Have, you know, we took videos of it, but you can't see it on the phone, obviously, but it's like, or you know, even on the camera, you couldn't see it, but it was like, what is that? And then 15 minutes later, we heard that Bigfoot vocalization. Now people are like, how is that? How can you not put the two and two together and connect the two? And I just don't think it's close, but it's not, I still can't connect the two. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, yeah, I've heard some good stuff. So, You know, I've heard a lot of good stuff off of the air that you know, comes from some stuff that would lead me to believe that there might be a connection in some cases of the two things of an unknown light source vehicle, whatever. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's so hard to see one or the other. Okay. That if you happen to see them both together, either you're the luckiest person on the face of the earth, or there's a connection.
Yeah, I guess I should have went out and bought a lottery ticket that night. I don't know.
Well, I think your luck ran out. You got to see them both. Because you got to see them both. But I do. I think that's. I don't know. It's just there's so much. There's just so much unknown when it comes to what's going on out there, you know.
But isn't it fantastic that we can sit down and have a conversation about that though?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I do. I mean, and I'm much older than you. So as I grew up in the 70s, and all you had was, you know, In Search Of and you know, I waited every week for the Scholastic book order thing to see if there was a book on the Bermuda Triangle or a ghost or something like that. I mean, that's the only way I got my fix for this stuff. And in the middle of Ohio, you never thought, which is crazy. This is what's crazy is growing up in Ohio, you never thought there was Bigfoot. But at the same time, the Minerva Monster was going on and it was national news. But because of where I lived, I got the news out of Columbus, or no, out of Toledo. And that was the news in Cleveland. So I never saw, you never saw it. You didn't even know. It's not even an hour away, you know, or it might have changed my whole life. I might have been, but you just didn't think that stuff. So our technology, like we said, is sometimes bad. But it's also good in sharing information and bringing the world a little bit closer when it comes to, you know, topics like this.
The technology's not going away, you know. And if we get it, I'm actually I have a docuseries out called Squatchables. It's kind of like a Bigfoot intro to Bigfooting 101 type of thing, DVD series. But I'm going to be putting out another series of it very shortly with strictly on technology and how we use this new sort of mapping software whenever we go Bigfooting. To map out where we're going to be, and we can do live tracks and stuff like that. It's just, I mean, the technology is just so great and the available stuff that we have and are going to have access to in the next year or so. It's just, I mean, and I know that goes against my whole thing of put down the phone and get outside, but like I said, it's not going away. So you might as well get the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah. You might as well embrace it and use it to your advantage.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so. Especially any Bigfoot researchers, I would say, you know, definitely if you have the ability to get some good mapping software and stuff like that, that makes Bigfooting so much easier. You can map where you hear vocalization or where you find a tree structure, and you could share it live time with people. It's so cool.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you using technology to come on with me and share some of these experiences and some of your insight from years of being out in the field. So tell everybody now, like, where they can go find your videos and stuff, and then where they can go and keep an eye out if you are coming to their town or near their town on your library tour.
Yeah, the place to be, it's a brand spanking new website we just have. It's called shadowofredeye.com. Can't beat it. It's the easiest thing you can remember. Shadowofredeye.com. It's got all of our tour information, all of our YouTube videos on it. We have an Etsy that we use to support our show's research for. We have some really cool, some Bigfoot magnets and keychains and stuff on there, which is awesome. And then our Instagram our Instagram is like behind the scenes type of thing. That's Shadow of Red Eye. And then our Facebook is In the Shadow of Big Red Eye. And our YouTube is, like I said before, it's Sussex County Bigfoot NJ. And the show's name is In the Shadow of Big Red Eye.
Yeah, I'd encourage everybody to go and check out. Like we were talking before, there's so much good stuff out there by so many good researchers and people doing investigations and stuff. And this is just one of those. This is just another one that is really good. And I appreciate you, like, you know, saying, look, I'm going to do this in the right way and show that, you know, it's just not all for entertainment. You know, you're really trying to do something, even though it is entertaining.
And you got to have fun doing it. That's the thing too. There are. I've met a handful of researchers that are really into it, and I think that's great. But yeah, I think it's also important to have some fun while you're doing it too.
You know, and that's the approach we take with the podcast. We love talking about this, but we also it's got to be fun too.
If it's not fun, you can't do it. Yeah, if it's not fun, don't do it.
It's not. You know? I mean, we're all busy. And you don't want to be doing stuff that makes you go like, oh God, I gotta do this. But no, Mike, I appreciate you coming on, and I hope.
Hey, thanks for having me, Shane. This was wonderful. I had a great time.
And if you hopefully you'll come to a library close to me, and I can come and sit in the back, and I will ask a bunch of like crazy questions and have everybody look around and say, who is this idiot back here? And maybe I get Stacey Brown to come with me too.
You're the guy in the back that's like, I know what happens next. I know what happens next when I'm trying to tell my story. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So, all right, Mike. Well, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And everybody go check out Sussex County Bigfoot on YouTube and in the Shadow of BigRedEye.com, right?
ShadowOfRedEye.com.
Oh, Shadow of Red Eye. It's not Big Red Eye, except...
It's. I had to shorten it because nobody wants to type out that much.
Okay. Well, we'll put some links up so everybody can everybody can find it. So
I appreciate
you hanging out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Shane. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time. Never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
God only knows what's hiding in our shadows.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.